Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If traffic seems heavier these days than it did 5 or 10 years ago, or even last year, you're not imagining it. Traffic is heavier in Charlotte and in all of the major and medium-sized cities in America. A new study just released by the Texas A&M Transportation Institute reveals the number of hours Americans spend in traffic nearly tripled in the last 5 years. That number is 54 hours per year on average. It's 57 in Charlotte. Worse, all that waiting in traffic costs each of us about $1,158 a year as we burn through 17.2 million gallons of gasoline a year going nowhere. And these numbers aren't likely to decline. So what can be done? Why is traffic getting worse? And why has it become unpredictable? We're going to get a local and a 30,000-foot perspective of all of this in the next hour. Taiwo Jioba is Charlotte's assistant city manager, a position he recently assumed. Prior to that, he was director of planning, design, and development for Charlotte, a position he retains because he just won't give it up. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
Good to see you. Liz Babson is here. She has more than 25 years' experience as a transportation engineer, 20 of those with Charlotte's Department of Transportation, of which she is now the director. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
And we're also joined by the co-author of the traffic study that I referred to a moment ago. Bill Isley is senior research engineer with the Texas A&M Transportation Institute, which produced the Urban Mobility Report 2019, and he joins us via Skype. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Let me begin with you, Taiwo. Traffic all around Charlotte, on the interstates, on the secondary roads, downtown, it seems to get, this is all anecdotal, I tell you, but it seems to get worse by the month, if not the week in some case. Is that my imagination, or is it getting worse by the month?
No, it's not. It's not your imagination. For the most part, I think Liz and Bill could probably confirm this, but congestion is often an outcome of growth. For urban development, the rate at which we're growing. Yeah. Now, last year, right about this time, we were the 17th largest city in the country by population. Now we're 16th largest in the country by population. And then during the daytime, it goes to about 1.3 million people. So I think Liz can also let you know that 51% of those people who come to work in uptown Charlotte, or at least in the city of Charlotte, come from outside the county, and then 49% within the county. And so this is going to continue to happen for many years as we continue to see a lot of growth. The way we project Charlotte's growth right now is that in the next 20 years, we will see an increase of about 325,000 people.
In the city itself?
In the city, yes. An increase of 325,000.
So that will put the city itself over a million people.
That will put the city itself over a million people. And we also project over 200,000 jobs. And where there are jobs, people will come.
So, Liz, the first question I'm going to ask you, I already know the answer to. Are we keeping up?
So the answer is yes.
We are keeping up.
Then
I didn't know the answer. How can you say that?
Well, we're keeping up in a number of different ways. First and foremost, we're planning for that growth. Ty will certainly talk about this in the coming comments, but we are planning for the future that we expect in this city, and we're trying to manage that growth in a way that we don't continue to increase congestion. And so we're investing in our infrastructure. We're continuing to build roads, sometimes new roads, intersection improvement projects. But we're also looking at not just how we get around in the city with cars, but we're looking at making sure that we're building a balanced transportation network so that we offer mobility choices for all of our residents in Charlotte.
We'll come back and talk about that in a second, but I have to go back to this. Are we keeping up? And you said yes, which is not the answer that I anticipated, because my anecdotal, once again, it's all anecdotal. My personal experience is that commutes that used to take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes at the most now take 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes sometimes.
Yes, Mike, and certainly some
and
people...
And it's weekends and even Sundays now.
Yes, Mike, and certainly some people do experience that in different ways. But overall across the city, we're seeing that congestion is not too dissimilar than what we had in the last decade or the decade before that.
I don't know where you're driving. Have you ever driven down South Boulevard?
Well, and so I'll let Bill talk to you a little bit, because I don't want to steal his thunder and talk about his study, but I certainly understand that perspective.
Yeah, okay. And we are going to spend a lot of time with Bill here. We say, Tywell, that growth is a good thing, and you alluded to the growth we're experiencing in terms of the population. We have 100 people plus moving here every day, we are told, and they bring their cars. When that happens, and then we allow multi-story, multi-family developments that are blocks long in places that used to have single-family homes or fairly abandoned mills that had nobody in them because the workers had long since gone away, because the business had long since gone away, and we put them on roads that were designed to handle traffic in the 1940s and the 1950s, and we don't widen those roads. How can we expect to not have horrible congestion?
To me, I believe that density, number one, you alluded to that, multifamily development,
right.
But also diversity of housing types. So it's not just apartments, but also townhouses, homes for people 55 years or older. It's a delicate balance between density and diversity, compact of development, but also including with that is robust transit network, which we don't have right now the way we should. I think that our average interval between transit services right now probably about 30 to 40 minutes. And so we don't necessarily need to widen roads because of density, but if we were to have, transit provision going alongside the type of density we want, and also allowing for people to be able to ride their bikes and also be able to maybe use scooters or walk to work. We it's a delicate balance between mobility options and development and roadway network.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet, but that's something that we continue to work on between us, especially as we plan for the future, between us and our transportation colleagues and our transit colleagues, looking at this as a system to achieve that balance.
So according to Bill Isley's survey, the Urban Mobility Report, Charlotte ranks 28th in the nation in terms of commuter traffic delays. Where do you see, Liz, our greatest challenges in terms of keeping traffic moving? Where are the bottlenecks at the moment?
And so, as Ty just mentioned, it's really about how we think about planning to grow for the future. If we continue to grow as we have for the last 50 years, then yes, we don't have a solution for how we can manage that congestion, because it will get worse. But as we think about planning for the future and making sure that we have choices for people and how they get around in the city and where they live in the city and where they work in the city, then we can start to give people mobility choices that they haven't had today, for example.
But that wasn't my question. Where are the bottlenecks?
So the bottlenecks are Providence Road. I mean, let's think about our major thoroughfares, Albemarle Road, West Boulevard, Wilkinson Boulevard. Those are the roads that carry people. As Ty mentioned, we have a lot of people coming in from outside of the city, working in the city. And those are the roads that carry that traffic. Those are also the roads, as I just mentioned, that are the main thoroughfares that we used in our development patterns over the last 50 years. So
right.
We've built in a way where we haven't allowed for connections other than people traveling from their house and getting on those major roads and then traveling to where they need to go.
And why didn't we do that? This goes back to previous planners and the lack of a planning director for a long, long time, I would think. So
I think it was before that.
Okay, before that?
Okay. I think Liz would tell you that we don't have a grid system.
right?
In the city. But you also note, though, that the place where we have the most number of congested intersections is the south area, obviously, because that's also where we have the second highest concentration of jobs and household growth in the city. So once you move out of Center City, it's South Charlotte where right. you have. And so we don't have that grid pattern. We don't have the dispersion of jobs in different places. And so that's led to concentration of congestion at certain intersections.
And a grid pattern, correct me if I'm wrong, gives you alternatives. If X Street is not moving well, you can cut over to Y, and maybe that is. And we don't have that option. If you're on Providence Road, you're on Providence Road. You aren't getting off. There's no other option. Yeah. So Bill Eisley is here. He's the senior research engineer for Texas A&M's Transportation Institute, the co-author of the Urban Mobility Report 2019, which takes a look at traffic patterns back to 1982. And your report highlights the reality of how, quote, motorists in the largest urban areas, including Charlotte, are experiencing the negative effects of congestion levels in their daily lives. You found, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, that traffic is getting worse in all of our medium and large size cities, correct?
That's correct, Mike. When you look at the statistics in terms of where the growth is, where there's high vitality, where there's a strong economy, and Ty hit the nail on the head. This linkage between the economy and being stuck in traffic is turning out to be about as reliable as gravity. So Charlotte is a desirable place to be. It's bringing jobs. There's a lot of activity. And so that's only going to increase the opportunity for more traffic and more congestion.
So where do we rank? Because for those of us who live here and who have lived here for a while when it didn't used to be like this, that makes us frustrated. So where do we rank? Where does Charlotte compare in terms of the pace at which congestion is getting worse and at the amount of congestion that we have on our streets? Can you answer that question from your study?
I can. So what we do, Mike, is we group all of locations together by population size, because certainly we don't want to compare you with the Los Angeles. But when we look at kind of the large areas, which is where we have Charlotte located, on average, those places are at 54 hours per auto commuter, which also happens to be the national average. And Charlotte's right at 57. So just a tad higher than the national average.
Maybe
the
average
for that size.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe I can add to that quickly also that as part of a comprehensive plan process, we identified certain aspirational cities for Charlotte. When we talk about aspirational cities, we often think about a Denver, we think about an Austin, we think about a Portland for different reasons. But when you look at, and Bill will confirm this, when you look at those particular cities, Portland, Denver, Austin, Portland has 66 hours in traffic, Denver 61, Austin 66, Charlotte is 57. Not like I'm trying to pat ourselves on the back, but the fact is that those aspirational cities, in instances, are not even as populated as we are. And yet, we still have been able to get to that 57 hours. I think I would not want to compare us to an Atlanta. I wouldn't want to compare us to. But some of those aspirational cities are also doing something that we definitely want to continue to do, which is what Liz mentioned earlier, offer a package of mobility options.
Atlanta comes in, by the way, for people who are wondering, at average number of hours of people sitting in traffic is 77 a year in Atlanta. In L.A., it's 119. In Washington, D.C., it's 102. Curiously enough, in Raleigh, it's 42. Is that the crux of the problem? They don't get it because they don't have any?
They're just about half our population size.
And better roads.
And a lot of students.
All right, we have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more with Taiwo Jayoba, who's the assistant city manager, Liz Babson, who's the director of Charlotte DOT, and Bill Eisley with the Urban Mobility Report at Texas A&M. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can. I'll give out all that information when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The political world has its attention elsewhere at the moment.
Hello, Iowa.
Thank you, New Hampshire.
But local offices with more of a day-to-day impact on Charlottesians are about to be on the ballot.
The Charlotte City Council meeting has now been called to order.
7 Democrats are running in next month's primary for City Council at large. Join Charlotte Talks for a live forum with the candidates Wednesday, August 28th at 7 p.m. at Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. Registration and more details at WFAE.org. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about traffic. We're talking about congestion. We're talking about solutions. We're talking about where we stand with the rest of the country in terms of our traffic problems and why traffic congestion and the amount of cars on the road has gotten substantially worse or larger or more congested in the last several years. Taiwo Jayoba is our city planner and also the assistant city manager. Liz Babson is the director of Charlotte DOT. And Bill Isley is a senior research engineer at Texas A&M Transportation Institute, the co-author of the Urban Mobility Report 2019. If you'd like to join our conversation, questions to ask, complaints to make, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Bill Isley, Charlotte's economy, as you mentioned, is booming. We're one of the nation's fastest growing cities. Unemployment is low, meaning more people commute every day. Your report says that, quote, myriad possible solutions from more highways, streets, and public transportation to better traffic operations, more travel options, new land development styles, advanced technology, etc., have not worked. End quote. Wow. Are you saying there are no solutions?
I'm certainly not saying there's no solution. I'm saying we know what the solutions are, but if you look back in time, we need more of everything. Clearly, there are pockets of success around the country in terms of solutions being rolled out and having benefits, but the reality is, and including in Charlotte, but the reality is we still see an increase in congestion. And what's interesting when you look at congestion, there isn't just one cause to it, so we can't expect that there'll just be one solution. And what I've liked so far about Ty and Liz's opening remarks is they've touched upon a number of different things that we really need to do that are all in the toolbox.
Your co-author in the study, Tim Lomax, says, quote, "We know what works. What the country needs is a robust, information-powered conversation at the local, state, and national levels about what steps should be taken." You've been analyzing data since 1982, or at least that's how far back your studies go, during which time traffic congestion has only gotten worse. So why haven't we been having that conversation?
I think what happens is it's complicated, right? Because there are so many stakeholders that must be involved in those conversations, particularly at the local level, to make sure that we are engaging employers, employees, industry, and also the commuting public. There's another aspect of this, and that is the trucking community and freight. If we look at the trends of what's happened with e-commerce, there's more and more people that are ordering things and expecting it to show up tomorrow. That puts us an additional strain on our transportation system that we're seeing everywhere. And so that's why really we need to have that conversation with all of these people and identify, as Tim states, you know, then what are the problems? What are the best solutions for those? And then how do we fund them? And some of these large infrastructure projects, as you know, take decades to get on the ground from planning.
Liz, I think people who travel down Providence Road in the morning or go back home down Providence Road in the evening or out South Boulevard or some of our other arteries, Independence Boulevard, some of the interstates, they know that it's going to be a slog every day. But what really aggravates people is where things are usually smooth and suddenly it's not. This erratic traffic behavior that we sometimes witness, particularly in the uptown area, where things can be smooth for weeks on end, and suddenly, for a week or two, you can't go where you used to go like that. What is the cause of these erratic problems?
So, Mike, I think the cause is complex. And what I mean when I say that is, we, as we've all said, Charlotte is a growing city. And with that growth comes a lot of change in construction, for example. We often see lane closures and sidewalk closures in the uptown that impact your trip. And as you mentioned a little earlier, we have some options in an area where we've got a better street network so that if the trip that you typically took is blocked or congested, then you've got an option to go in a different route. Mm.
You, last week on College Street, I'm just going to, once again, this is anecdotal, but it seemed as though almost every intersection from, 4th Street to 7th Street and beyond had some sort of construction on it. Is any of this planned? Wait a minute, you're the planning director. Is any of this planned?
Yes.
Why would you do that to us?
I know that. You know this. I know that on Wednesday, you're going to have Michael Smith here, who is going to talk about the Center City plan and the fact that just in the last decade alone, it's like we've doubled the number of housing units uptown, retail.
But don't they walk?
I mean, think about it this way, that sometimes this is one of the reasons why I felt Charlotte is a very unique city. A number of American cities, their uptown or their downtown is ringed by industrial areas. Charlotte is ringed by neighborhoods. And most of those neighborhoods today are single-family residential, maybe duplexes in some instances, triplexes in some places. But now we're beginning to see more requests for increased density in those neighborhoods. And on the other hand,
who's making those requests?
There's a lot of development coming in and asking for those.
Yes.
And then on the other hand, the neighbors don't want that. But I'm going to say that that's going to be the wave of the future for us.
So
you move closer to
your putting
economic
the
activity centers.
Look at where you're putting the density, though. I mean, South End was a vast wasteland for years. Mm-hmm. And what has happened there is a miracle. There's no question about it. But you look at Camden Road, which used to have one-story, two-story commercial buildings on it. Now you've got five and six and seven. I'm not sure how tall they go. Eight-story apartments that go for the full blocks that they're in. And there are thousands of people living in those units on roads that are equipped to. They're one lane in each direction. That's insanity. I mean, yeah.
You know, you're right. In some instances, we don't really have the right of way to widen those roads. So the options will have to be that as you build taller, rather than just providing a lot of parking spaces, sometimes it's to really incentivize people to use other means of movement that will bring them uptown to economic activity centers. I think Liz will tell you that major employment and activity centers in Charlotte are within 45 minutes of 80%
of our households.
And so if a lot of people who commute to work in uptown Charlotte are coming from about 45 minutes away, the hope is that we'll be able to get more people live closer so that they can take other options rather than us widening roads because we don't have the right of way, right?
Or possibly take shorter trips.
Mm-hmm. Or possibly limit development.
Well, when people say
that. I mean, at what point do you kill the goose that lays the golden egg? I mean, if people want to live here and they want to live uptown or they want to live in South End or they want to live in Elizabeth and they want to live in a 5-6-story apartment that goes for 2 or 3 blocks and the roads can't handle the congestion, at some point people are going to say, I don't want to live there.
Yeah. What you have to think about, Mike, is that a healthy, vibrant, thriving community will always have development. It's how we make sure that we tie the development to not become a burden to people who live
here. Well, that's my question.
Here.
Will we receive the resources that we need to build this transportation infrastructure that you're talking about that gives people choices, be it choices for their cars, or bike lanes, or mass transit of some sort? Do we have it? Are we getting the money for that from the state, from the federal government, from our local coffers.
So the good news story from the state perspective is that several years ago, the state legislation did change, and it recognized the need for investing more in areas where population was higher, and Charlotte was a huge benefactor.
And yet
that.
Last week, NCDOT announced that they will be delaying 48 projects in Mecklenburg, Iredell, Cabarrus, and Union counties for budget reasons.
And so I'm not as familiar with those other areas, but Charlotte specific, we have $3.2 billion of investment that's coming from NCDOT and federal funds in the next 10 years, and we've only seen four of those projects with this new information that will be delayed, and only delayed by 1 year.
Okay.
And so the benefit of the NCDOT investment, while that's heavily focused on the interstate and freeway system, if we can build capacity in those areas, as Ty talked about earlier, where we've got a lot of regional traffic and through traffic coming through Charlotte, if we can build that capacity in that interstate system, then we start to alleviate some of the congestion on our surface streets and our local streets.
Well, what I think I'm hearing you say, Taiwo, is that what we need are options. We can't go forward into the mid-21st century and say everybody has to use their cars, because that simply can't happen.
No, it's not.
So you're talking about building out a bus system. You're talking about the streetcar, I guess. You're talking about light rail. We have one light rail line and one streetcar line. Even if we had the money, even if somebody said, okay, build those five different light rail lines, put another streetcar line in, even if they said that today and they made the money available today, could we keep up? Would it be done? Would it be working and operable by the time we actually really, really need it?
Listen, I'm a champion of transit and robust transit network. You know, make sure that the intervals between bus services are 5, 10, 15 minutes where you don't even need to look at an app or something. Mm-hmm. But I will also be wrong to say that transit is going to solve the congestion problems. You've got to have other things like transportation demand management strategies, whether you increase your pool of van pools, open up lanes for carpools, have managed lanes, opportunities for people who even want a bike to feel safe. So it's a system. I would say it's a package of solutions. You're right. Right now we have one light rail. We're talking again about the Silver Line coming from the south all the way to the airport, and even all it's coming from Stallings all the way to Belmont in the future. It's got to take some regional partnership and initiative to make that happen. But I truly believe that we need to start looking at making major, significant investment in our bus network. A situation where someone has to go from home to work and takes 2 hours to do that is not healthy.
Yeah.
And you don't always have to come uptown to get to where you need to go.
Right.
Most people will do one seat, one transfer, but a lot of people will not do two transfers. So if we were to invest in a system that allows people to be able to wait for the next bus that will show up in 5 to 10 minutes and connect them to their jobs and to daycare and to, where their grandparents live, I think it begins to solve some of the problems.
Two questions. Do we have the money to buy the buses that would have to be put on the road to do that? And if we had the money and we put those buses on the road, what would that do to congestion?
To me, I'll say that it has to be a regional partnership. If we have a regional partnership with other cities and other jurisdictions within, for example, the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization service area, yes, we can actually significantly increase the mode shift from single occupant vehicles to transit and other means of moving to work. It may not be 50% overnight, or we will not become a European city overnight in terms of how we solve congestion, but I will constantly say that the places people really want to go have congestions. It's just really making sure that we offer those other options. So if we have that infusion of money, I think it will help us tremendously.
So Bill, Taiwo was talking about dedicated commuter lanes, for carpool lanes rather, but that seems to be on interstates. But I don't think you can do that. Maybe you can on city streets. Is there a city in America that has faced this increased congestion that has begun to solve the problems pretty well?
Well, the first part of your question, have they faced it? Yes, just about all of them. have they handled it pretty well? I think The answer is we're seeing congestion grow still in all these growing cities. So, you know, quite frankly, we haven't been able to keep up. So, like I said, we see pockets of success. So if somebody asks me, Bill, off the top of your head, tell me somebody that's doing something innovative on the freeway system, for example. I'll typically point to Minnesota or Seattle and Washington.
Why?
Where they've got variable messages on the speeds. So the variable speeds, they'll look at opportunities for what's called active traffic management. So it's kind of demand responsive traffic management. And what's happening in Charlotte, if you look at the line haul, like on the I-77 toll lanes, is similar. It's providing a mobility option. You know, if you think about it, in the evening, it provides choices. You know, maybe if it's your turn to mow the lawn, you're not in a hurry to get back home. But if they're wanting to not miss your daughter's recital, then you're probably willing to pay that extra expense on I-77 to get home. So it's those sorts of examples. And that's just that's kind of the line haul. That's the main route, if you will. When we get into the city, it's a conversation about timing traffic signals and so forth.
Let's talk about the coming and going. Liz, the Urban Mobility Report says that in 2017, the worst, I don't know how it is today, but in 2017, the worst congestion in Charlotte is at 5 o'clock, 5 to 6 p.m., Monday through Thursday, and then 4 to 5 on Friday. I guess that's because people are getting out of work and going home early. They're getting an extra hour on the weekend. But things are better in the mornings, according to this study. How can that be? Because everybody has to be at work at the same time, pretty much. But you can go home anytime you want to. Why is it worse in the afternoons?
So I'm not sure I can't speak for other people, for example, but I think that there is a little more flexibility in the morning with arrival times. You've got people taking kids to school. You've got people running errands. Mm-hmm. And so I think that peak spreads out over a longer period of time, whereas in the afternoon, schedules are pretty set a little more, and people are more concentrated in the time at which they choose to leave work and go home.
Bill, your report also shows that traffic is nearly as bad as it is at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday, on Saturday between noon and 4. How do you come up with all these figures? How do you know this stuff?
Yeah, so we used to always joke if we could just put chips in people's heads, we would know where everybody was, right? What all
well,
the trips were that they
you've
have
got,
to do.
You've got smartphones.
Yep. And you stole my thunder. And now we've got these cell phones. So we got the chips and we didn't have to put them in anybody, which is fantastic. But with these cell phones and this crowdsourced data, we can tell what are those speeds out on the roads and when. And, you know, different vehicle fleets are out there that are instrumented for different trucking companies and others. And those data are resold to companies that make that available to us. And so that's how we can look at that. I think what also happens on the weekends and then as you get towards the afternoon is people wake up. Not everybody needs to get up in the morning to go off to work. There's recreational trips that also occur in the afternoon and on weekends. And face it, Charlotte's a popular place. People are recreating there. You've got the Charlotte Motor Speedway as well. So I know you've got the second biggest special event that occurs in Charlotte at least, once a year.
Twice a year, actually. Well. And when that happens, that area becomes the second largest city in North Carolina. We have to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about traffic and congestion. If you thought it's getting worse, you are correct, and we're not alone. It's happening in all of the major cities around the country, and that is because the economy is booming, employment is high, and people want to go where the jobs are, and one of those places is Charlotte. And we're growing by leaps and bounds. So at what point is the tipping point, I guess, is the question, and can we keep up? Taiwo Jayoba is the assistant city manager and the planning director for the city of Charlotte. Liz Babson is director of Charlotte DOT. And Bill Isley is senior research engineer at Texas A&M Transportation Institute, the co-author of the Urban Mobility Report 2019. Let me share with you some of the emails and comments from Facebook and Twitter that have been coming in as we've been talking. Mary emails, a few years ago on your show, the man who was in charge of the I-77 toll project said we can never keep up with the demand for roads. Doesn't that tell you something? Why are we continuing to build new roads and widening existing ones? Why aren't we putting more money into finding more efficient ways of moving people around? Is there an answer to that question, Tyler?
That is so true. We definitely are. But it's a competitive process, which is why I keep saying that the more regional focused we become, the more successful we can be at the federal level in terms of attracting funding.
So are you saying that we have to get buy-in from the surrounding counties, Gaston, Iredell, Catawba?
I truly believe that when we work together as a region, we make the best case.
Are we getting that buy-in?
So far, yes. Like I said, Silver Line right now, we actually have support from all the way from Stallings to Belmont in terms of building it. It was that when the 2030 transit system plan was developed, it was only from Indian Trail. It was only actually from Matthews to the airport. Now all the way from Stallings to Belmont, that's huge.
We spoke recently to the mayors of Rock Hill and Fort Mill.
Yes.
And both of them want the Blue Line.
I know that a lot of people want Blue Line. As a matter of fact, Pineville mm-hmm. did not want it initially.
Yeah.
Now they want it. Usually success, in my mind, begets success. And so I truly believe that we need to make concerted effort to say this is what we're going after. And frankly speaking, it cannot just be, again, public transit, but also other means of mobility, maybe shuttle services for employees to go from one place to the other.
And flex hours.
Yes,
flexible hours. What is more expensive? Is it more expensive to build the light rail than it is to build more lanes on I-77 or an alternative, an entirely new alternative to I-77?
You know, I think
widening 21?
It's a per mile thing, right? I don't know
okay.
the roadway piece, but I know that we just built the light rail system, which cost us $1.6 billion to the 10 miles of that, which cost us $1.6 billion.
What's it going to take to widen? How much money is it going to take to widen I-77 from Center City to South Carolina?
Well, we haven't done that cost yet, and
really?
That's something that NCDOT is working on right now through a feasibility study.
All right.
But it'll be expensive.
Tony on Twitter, the intersection of Harrisburg and Albemarle backs up almost constantly, yet the planning department allows rezoning to occur that will add more than 1,000 housing units with zero transportation improvements. This is what I'm talking about.
So what I'd like to clarify also is that rezoning does not often result in development. Rezoning only gives you the ability to do it.
Yes, but why would you give somebody the ability to do it if you're not going to plan for the roads to widen or the transportation system to improve to accommodate the people that will live there if they do it?
If you don't have a plan or policy in place puts you in this position where you can say no to a development. If the plan that's there right now allows that type of development, mm-hmm. saying no to it is only going to put us in a bad situation, which is, again, why we're updating some of these area plans. Some of these area plans, when they made recommendations for those types of development, were done 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
And so as we work on a comprehensive plan, that's, to me, is where all of these things have to work together.
So in that comprehensive plan, there will be transportation improvements.
There will be,
and where there is not money for transportation improvements, will they then go back and say we're going to change the zoning here and not allow that kind of development?
So one of the things that you may like to hear is that part of a comprehensive plan is also to do what we call a fiscal impact analysis of this. So if we're saying that so many people will move to Charlotte, where will they live? What will be the impact on roadways? What will be the cost of building those infrastructure? Then when we review rezoning petitions, we look at all of those things together.
So I know that you know, Bill, that traffic congestion has gotten worse since 1982 in all the cities around the country that you've looked at, which includes ours. At what point do the costs associated with congestion negate any benefits to a healthy economy that growth provides a city when worker pay has not risen very much in 20 or 30 years? How can they afford to be stuck in traffic?
Yeah, I think, you know, quite frankly, that's something that we don't necessarily get into in the study. But I think the fact that we see all of these places continue to grow, it's not that people are markedly leaving these markets. I think it was nice, though, the way Ty pointed out that some of their peer cities are actually worse. Well, in those peer cities, you know, they point to the other cities that are even worse. But I think what happens is people make adjustments. You know, you're not going to spend hours and hours in traffic without starting to rethink your own situation and your travel choices and where you're going to be willing to work or where you might even take your kids to school or medical appointments. Those things all sort of drive those day-to-day trips.
There's a political school of thought that we can't afford to build this infrastructure. We can't afford to build more roads. We can't afford to build mass transit rail lines because we'd have to raise taxes. And we don't want to raise taxes because people will get upset if we raise taxes, so we won't do it. Your report says that congestion is a tax. Explain that.
Well, it's a hidden tax per se. So the cost that we're putting on things is just wasted time and fuel, and we call that a little bit of an invoice, or we have used the word tax in quotes, just because at some level, like it or not, we've accepted or we're paying that tax. It is time that we are wherever we're headed and stuck in that traffic, we have valued high enough that I've got to be there. I've got to go there. It's worth this penalty for me to be caught in congestion and wasting this fuel.
Well, has anybody anywhere asked the question of people stuck in that traffic whether they would rather pay the commuter tax, the congestion tax, wasted dollars in gasoline, et cetera, and time, or whether they'd rather just pay more in taxes and have these transportation routes improved?
I'm not familiar with anything specifically like that.
I'm not familiar with anything.
Why not? That seems
like
an obvious question to me.
Seems to me like, yeah. I mean, in our case, 1,200 hours per person a year. That's a lot. I'll say this. The cost of doing nothing is tremendously high. And so how we fund this, we just have to come together, private, public, regional entities. But there's just got to be a coordinated, concerted effort to invest significantly in mobility means mm-hmm. in our city and our region, essentially. So the cost of doing nothing is going to be high, and that's taxing itself.
Robert emails, I object to builders blocking one lane of traffic for construction equipment. The project should not be built unless the builder can construct it without taking away a lane of traffic for many hours of the day. That sounds like South Boulevard to me. What is the rule there?
Obviously, our first course of action is to try to make all of that construction activity happen on site. Sometimes that's not always possible. Right. Sometimes they're making improvements to the travel lane or the sidewalk, and it requires that they make those closures to get in that space to do that construction activity. We also limit their hours of operation for most of those construction activities and construction sites so that they're outside of that peak period when the majority of our motorists are traveling on those roads.
And the peak periods would be what?
From 7 to 9 and 4 to 6.
Okay. Why can't they do a lot of that work at night and on weekends?
Well, we have this thing called a noise ordinance, and being in a big community the size of Charlotte, we have lots of people that live near construction activities, and so if you're one of those, you appreciate and value the fact that we protect keeping things quiet at night.
Sam on Twitter, in response to the question, can anything fix the gridlock? Yes, he says. Build a dense city with truly walkable neighborhoods, and that makes it easier to provide good, reliable, frequent public transportation options. And you're all nodding in agreement.
Yeah.
Regina on Facebook, Regina on Facebook, why is it so bad? That one is easy. Poor planning, lack of vision, lack of funds. Do you agree with any of that?
I mean, I don't disagree that sometimes it's because our vision has not been broad enough probably bold enough to be able to challenge the way things are. I really truly believe, I hear this mantra a lot, we don't want to be like Atlanta, and that's wonderful. But the fact is that Atlanta has a robust transit network on the ground, on the surface, and better frequencies. But at the end of the day, though, we've got something that Atlanta does not have, and that is the fact that we have a bigger city. city is 900, it's almost 900,000 people. Atlanta City itself, it's less than 500,000 people. If we can succeed in this city, I think it will impact our region tremendously, which is why I truly believe that we can invest a whole lot more in what we do. We've got to be bold with our vision, bring transit. And my wife and I were just in Paris this year, and we did not even have to look at our app to be checking when the next bus will come. We just waited for a couple minutes, and 3 minutes later it was there. Can we get to that point? I think we can. I just think we've got to be bold with our vision. We've got to make sure that we plan land use together with transportation and transit and other means of mobility. Funding is a whole different story, because we can definitely not do this by ourselves. It's got to be a coordination and a combination between city, county, region, state, federal. How we do that is going to have to depend on us as well.
Let's talk about downtown traffic lights for just a second. I've been told by transportation people in the transportation department that our lights are computer controlled and that they are timed. That's still true?
That is true.
I don't see any evidence of that.
Well, that's unfortunate.
So what's informing the computer?
So we actually operate the Uptown system on what we call a time-based system. So we don't typically rely on detection in the streets.
Why not?
Because we've got short block spaces and a very well-connected network. So it doesn't require the type of detection that we have outside of the center city.
So it's a dumb system.
I wouldn't say dumb.
It doesn't know what's going on. It just knows it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Therefore, I'm going to make these lights a little shorter or a little longer.
It is based on time of day.
Okay, so when do they change over? What times of day do we give access
to? So obviously we have a pattern that we've used to coordinate traffic coming into the city and the uptown. We have a similar pattern going in the opposite direction in the afternoon. We run different patterns at different times of day depending on volumes. And as Bill mentioned a little while ago, we've got lots of data now. And so there's big data that's
out there. Well, there is big data. My car knows where the traffic jams are. It knows.
Exactly.
Waze knows. So why don't you know? Why doesn't the traffic light system know?
Well, we do. And so you mentioned
this.
Does
it adjust?
It can. We actually monitor those traffic signals, and we make those timing changes whenever we see the need to. But keep in mind, Mike, something might be an obstacle to you for 15 minutes, and it doesn't help the entire system if we make a change immediately.
In certain times of day, like in rush hours, is priority given to traffic coming into the city from the south and the north or to the east and west? Because you can't do it in all directions, can you?
No. No,
priority has to be given to something.
Yes. Well, we call it right-of-way, and okay. So if we didn't do that, then people would crash.
Yes. So what is the priority in mornings?
So it's based on the traffic counts that we take. But, yes, you're exactly right. We don't run true north-south, but the way I would describe it differently is our numbered streets carry a lot more volume. And so in the mornings, we give priority to the signal timing on the numbered streets coming into and through the uptown.
Ah, that explains a lot. Okay, and that's based on traffic counts.
Yes.
How up to date are those traffic counts?
Well, we take traffic counts every 2 years, or anytime anything changes, we have the ability to go out with big development and take new traffic counts.
So every two.
In addition, we have access to lots of data, and we're constantly looking at the data that's now available.
Is 2 years enough? I mean, because things have changed a lot in 2 years.
Well, again, we'll take them periodically whenever there are changes.
Do apps like Waze or Google Maps or the GPS on your car, which shows you where traffic, Sirius XM does this too, traffic jams are they helpful or are they hurtful? In other words, if you see on your map that there might be a jam up ahead, you're going to cut over to a different street if you can. Does that help or hurt?
We actually think it's helpful because, again, it's based on a ton of data. We provide Waze, for example, so I'm glad you mentioned them, information about our road closures. And so they've got up-to-date, accurate information, and they can help you plan your trip.
So I have a minute left here, Bill. We all know the nation's infrastructure is woefully out of date. Your report says the nationwide cost of gridlock has grown more than tenfold to $166 billion a year. How much of our infrastructure could be updated or repaired with $166 billion?
A lot.
Thank you for being succinct.
You only said you had a minute, so.
I said a minute, not a second. So a lot. So are we being penny wise and pound foolish, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. I think, again, it boils down to having that discussion at the local level and identifying what works best in each community, and that's going to differ.
Bill Isley is the senior research engineer for the Texas A&M Transportation Institute and the co-author of the Urban Mobility Report 2019, which is very interesting and shows Charlotte in a difficult light in some ways. Liz Babson, director of Charlotte DOT, Taiwo Jayoba, the assistant city manager and planning director for the city of Charlotte. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.